and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris, and you're watching The Future is Female. This is the show where we find the extraordinary in every woman. My guest today is Ahila Ganesan. She is the Director of Strategy and Development for Think City, which is under Khazanah National, and she's also the Special Advisor for to the London-based ESG Foundation. Ahila, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you. Thank you so much for taking time to join me today.
Thank you for having me.
I'd like to begin, Ahila, our conversation with a look at why you're so passionate. You are such an advocate championing the ESG and sustainability agenda. For those who may be new to it, ESG, environmental, social, and governance considerations. I'm curious to know when you first learned or recognized that you needed to champion sustainability in your professional life, because I feel just based on your work and what you've been talking about, my impression is that for you it's not just work, it's not just secondary. It's sustainability is a value, is a principle for you. I hope I've got that right.
Well, I appreciate how you've kind of packaged it. I like that the way that you've done it. It is. It sort of started off when I was in consultancy. So I'm an architect by training, and I was in consultancy for a good decade. And during that time, it was around the time when they released GBI, Green Building Index, if you're familiar with it. And I was one of the first few batches. I think I was the fourth batch to sit for the GBI exam and, be certified as a facilitator. So that was all about looking at sustainability from the perspective of the built environment as an architect. How would you as an architect look at it and try to adapt to the future, which has to be sustainable, right? So that happened in 2009, I believe. That was when I actually started the journey. Subsequently, I left consultancy and then I was in property development for a good 10 years as well. And one of the property developers I was with was Sunway Property. And if you know Sunway Property, they're also very big supporters of sustainability. They have the Jeffrey Sachs Center in Sunway University, which is about the sustainable development goals. And so that was a continuation, right? So it moved up the scale, meaning from consultancy, I went into property development and looking at the business perspective. And subsequently, I moved on and I joined Think City, and this was about in 2020. And it essentially moved up the chain again. Now I was looking at sustainability at an even bigger perspective, even broader perspective, which is related to nation building. So that was, again, it was very interesting change in career, very interesting change of pace in career as well. And it has been a great journey. I also have now got my own company that deals with ESG specifically, called FutureLink, and that looks at ESG for businesses specifically. So the work that I do in Think City is more of looking at the environmental and social aspects as it concerns the nation, and the work that I do in FutureLink is as it concerns businesses.
Well, this is fascinating to me because, you know, you started from, say, from, you know, as a consultant and then moving into business and then into government, into looking at more a wider, more social, more government policy aspect. At what point does it get harder? I mean, did you find that as a consultant, you're just advising companies to prioritize ESG principles, and as business, perhaps you could influence from within an adoption of ESG principles. Did you find it more difficult from the outside as opposed to from within?
Well, let's start off. Let's unpack it a bit, because it wasn't known as ESG way back in 2009. Yes, it probably existed, but it was probably more of a European term. And it was not really existing in Malaysia. It was called sustainability, right? That was the key word, the catchphrase that we were using at that point. And yes, so it was looking at it from a micro perspective as a consultant, because you have a project, you look at how to make it sustainable within that project. When you move on to property development, then it gets a little bigger, right? It's not just that project, but the supply chains that you have to handle as well to make that project sustainable. So you move up the value chain, so to speak. And then with the work in Think City, it is again looking at an even bigger scale, because it's looking at the nation, it's looking at climate adaptation for specific cities, looking at sponge cities. So, you know, it is a very different dynamic. I would say it's sort of like moving from micro to macro as your career progresses. So, yeah.
I really like that. And, you know, for the amount of years that you've been looking at this, are you seeing forward momentum, Ahila? Are you seeing some progress that is being made, particularly in corporate Malaysia?
I absolutely think there is. Look, there's always room for improvement, right? We can't deny that. But there's definitely been a push. It used to be a buzzword, ESG, but the past couple of years, it has changed. It's now part of the mainstream. Clearly, there are people who are looking at it from the perspective of how do you look at what investors are looking at, right? Because at the end of the day, the businesses need to look at investors and look at the customers. And the customers and the consumer base is now pushing for ESG. They're looking at how do you invest responsibly? And it's not a catchphrase anymore. It's not a buzzword anymore. It is something that needs to be driven. It is being driven nationally as well. Institutional investors are looking at it. You've got EPF looking at it. You've got PNB looking at it. And there's no more of, you know, let's wait and see how it works out. It's kind of like you've got to get on the bandwagon. There's no two ways about it. And that's what's interesting. Are we there yet? You know, your question as to are we there yet? No, the answer is no. And here's why. Big corporations, public listed companies are having the push by Bursa. Maybe they want to be part of FTSE for good. And that makes sense, right? But however, their supply chains are the SMEs. And SMEs are the biggest drivers in this country. And they have not much impetus to move along the ESG line, so to speak. And to be fair to them, they also probably can't afford it, right? Because there's always this perception. How do you look at this sustainability aspect? How do you look at this and not think of the monetary aspect to it and how much it's going to cost you? And SMEs are in a fight for survival at this moment in time, post-pandemic. So how do you then convince them that this is the way to move forward? And that's the challenge where public listed companies are going to face. Because, you know, as you want to become ESG friendly and have ESG as part of your business strategy in a public listed company, your downline, your supply chain needs to follow suit as well. And that's where the SMEs come in.
Well, I have read something called the ESG premium. Is that a myth? Is that a misconception that, you know, for many businesses, SMEs included, they think that adopting ESG and sustainability principles means increased costs in terms of not just in operations, but in reporting, in monitoring, all of those things. Is that, how do you talk to businesses when they come to you and say, well, tell me about the ESG. Am I going to have to pay an ESG premium?
Look, I'm not going to deny that there's going to be a cost involved, right? But here's the thing. If you don't address that cost now, it's going to come back and it's probably going to come back tenfold for all you know. Let me give you an example. If you're a company that has, this is one of the typical examples that I use because it's easy for people to understand. If you're a company like, say, Zara or one of those fast fashion brands that you have out there, and you're very reliant on supply chains in Bangladesh, climate change is going to happen. It's not something that you can avoid. It is going to happen. It's just to what degree, but it will happen. So if your factories are in Bangladesh, where you know that there will be issues of flooding in years from now, do you want to address that situation now because it's a risk? Yes, there's a premium to think about it now, but if you do business as usual, you're going to find that you're going to probably be paying a lot more in the future. So there is a cost, but I think the cost of not dealing with it now is probably a lot more and a lot scarier.
Okay, so organizations cannot opt out from integrating ESG principles into their strategies. Can I ask you then, I know you are an affiliate with the Institute of Corporate Directors Malaysia, ICDM, and I'm just wondering what what kind of resources? Because I think many boards are either currently or maybe very soon will be required to actually drive this ESG agenda within their institutions. They will have to take their ESG reporting, sustainability reporting seriously. What advice, what resources do you have for those who may be unfamiliar in this area?
Okay, let's put it this way. How do you, as part of a board, start looking at how you can have ESG incorporated into your organization and drive it as well, right? As a board, I think that's what you're trying to get at. So I think the first thing is that you need to shift from a compliance to a strategic mindset. I think that's key. That's number one. So you need to take forward-looking approaches and positions. This is what companies need to do. You need to capitalize on ESG investing trends, competitively differentiate yourself from other firms. And that is looking at the strategy aspect. Right now, what you have is compliance. Like you rightly pointed out, people are looking at the cost of reporting. Reporting is but one aspect of it, right? And that's towards the end. What you need is the strategy first, and that needs to happen first. And then you've got next, what you have, knowing that ESG factors, what are the ESG factors that matter most to your business, right? What is material to your business? And every business is different. If you're in the oil and gas industry, your concerns are going to be very different from someone who's in fast fashion, right? So, and that is inherent. So you need to first look at what is material to your organization in order to unlock the ESG value, right? And prioritize a specific set of factors that intersect with business, you know, from that perspective. Then you come to the board. You need to expand your board committee responsibilities to include ESG. Right now you have risk committee, right? So you've got the risk committee, but ESG is not just under risk. It actually cuts across because there's also the S component, which is very HR related. There's also legal concerns, right? So it cuts across. It doesn't just sit with one committee. It cuts across. So committees need to then play a vital role moving forward on how to have the appropriate attention towards each and every one of the issues as it relates to ESG and the materiality concerns of the business. Mm-hmm. And finally, I mean, and this one always falls off, right? And people don't look at it. You need to oversee how the company is telling their ESG story. And that is key. You need to have robust governance policies, and you also need to have them for reporting. And the storytelling part of it, the narrative of what you are doing, is very important. And this goes directly into enterprise value, because you might be doing certain things already, but unless people out there know about it, and the investors know about it, and the stakeholders know about it, it's not going to get you anywhere.
Why do companies fail at that? And I think that's quite fascinating. It's a very important element, and I'm glad you brought it up. Telling the story of your company's approach to ESG is very important to get the buy-in of everyone. Why do you think they fail at that?
I think it's not so much that they fail, but it's more like they are perhaps, they don't have a specific group of people who are looking at it on a day-to-day basis. I think,
or may not even prioritize it, right? Among the many things.
Okay. Yes, and I think your comms team, your brands team, and they need to be part of the conversation. They need to be able to then stitch together the narrative. Again, when you look at the reporting there is out there when it comes to ESG reporting, it's by and large going to be quite dry. How do you take that narrative and put it into something compelling that will get the buy-in of your investors and your consumers? Because that's your target market that you're trying to reach. Not forgetting that you also need to reach another target market. You've got internal stakeholders, which is your own staff, right? And your own employees, and you've got external stakeholders. It's all very well and good to say we are doing this as a company, but if your staff don't also chime in and also say the same thing and have the same sort of like, sing to the same tune, you're going to be very out of tune.
All right. Ahila, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and continue this conversation. Stay tuned to The Future is Female. We will be right back. Hi, welcome back to The Futures Female. I'm chatting today to Ahila Ganesan. She is Senior Director of Strategy and Senior Director for Strategy and Development for Think City. That's under Khazanah National. She's also Special Advisor to the London-based ESG Foundation. I want to talk a little bit about your work with Think City. As you described it a bit earlier, Ahila, going from micro to now looking at the macro picture, you work in sustainable urbanism. I was quite curious to know what that is. Could you tell us a little bit about what that is, what sustainable urbanism is?
Okay, for me to explain that, I've got to explain what cities are, right? Cities are getting bigger, we know that. The trajectory in which we see cities expanding in Malaysia, we're looking at by 2050, 70 to 80% of the population are going to be urbanized. So when you look at things along the spectrum of E and the S specifically, the only way to move the needle is if you look at cities. Rural areas are not going to cut it anymore. How do you move? Because they are cities are going to become the biggest polluters. Cities are going to become the biggest concerns when it comes to vulnerable communities, be it because of climate change, or it could be economic issues as far as B40 communities are concerned, or women and children are concerned, or homeless people. So that is where we look at sustainable urbanism. How do you make cities future-proof? How do you make them sustainable? Because the future is in cities. It's not in rural areas anymore.
Okay, so when we think about that, and the city planner's role and the architect's role and, you know, people like you, people in Think City, you think about the built environment and you see sometimes that social, economic and gendered inequalities are still literally being built into the built environment, into new places. How can organizations like Think City work with city planners and architects and property developers to perhaps look at the impact of their decisions and their projects on all these three things, on social, economic, gendered injustices?
Actually, we're already doing that right now. I mean, it's important to see where we stand. Changes can't come from just consultants and architects and planners. It needs to come from government because there are policy considerations that we need to take into account. Why are cities planned the way they are? It could possibly be because of the guidelines in place, the policies in place. So right now, the policies that are in place are probably not suited to where the city's trajectory should go. So it is important, number one, to create awareness. And that is what Think City is trying to do. We're trying to work with governments, work with the private sector, with the public sector, with communities. Because at the end of the day, what's a city if not the people in it, right? It's not just a bunch of buildings. It is actually the people in it that give life to a city. So how do you work in this intersection? And it's complex. It's complex. How do you work in this intersection and make people understand that moving forward, things have to change, be it through policy, be it through understanding what the difficulties are on the ground for B40 communities, on the ground for vulnerable communities. One of the interesting points that you have brought up earlier is about cities being planned in a way that it doesn't address, say, women. And that's because historically, cities have always been built for men, because women were always at home, right? So if you look back centuries, cities were planned for men. So now that we have a perhaps a society that's moving towards having more equal opportunities for women, then the policy needs to change. The way we design our cities need to change. The way we make sure our alleyways are designed needs to be changed.
How would you do that, Ahila? How do you make a city more inclusive for women?
Okay, so we did a report and we first tried to understand what is the feeling that women have when they walk through a city. And by and large, and you probably know this, Melissa, when you walk in downtown KL, you might not necessarily feel safe. It depends on the time of day. During the day, probably you don't have an issue, but at night you would have an issue because of the fact that perhaps the streets are not lit as well as they should be. Maybe the streets are not as clean as it should be. right? Or it could be an issue of the alleyways are not kept well. And all of this goes back to how do we address these concerns that people have? And if you're wearing high heels and there are potholes everywhere, that could be a concern if you had to make a fast escape, right? If there was any reason to. So how do you then deal with that? And we had interesting findings as well in our report. I strongly urge you to go and have a look at it in our Think City website about women's safety in downtown KL. We interviewed not just local women, but also foreign women. And it was very different, right? The perception for local women, they felt safer when they saw people in uniform and they didn't feel so safe when they saw crowds of foreigners. But it was the reverse for foreign women. Foreign women felt safer when they saw men who were from the same, who were foreigners like them. But they didn't feel so safe when they saw people with police uniforms. So it's a very different thing. So we think we know what we know, but actually we don't, because everybody is different and the communities are different. How do you then address this accordingly? So it needs to be drilled down. You need to understand what the issues are. And then you need to do a baseline assessment of what these issues are before you can propose interventions that are going to be able to tackle the issues, specific issues, targeted issues, rather than broad-based issues.
Right. Well, but Ahila, city planning happens decades in advance. Then what we live today, where cities that we live in today often are the result of the decisions made by city planners many, many years ago.
Absolutely.
When we think about perhaps some of these interventions that you mentioned, is it possible to make cities more inclusive or to undo some of maybe the perceived lack of safety for women or lack of inclusion for women? Is it possible to reverse some of the damage that's done?
Absolutely, it is. Absolutely, it is. It, again, going back to it, could be as simple as increasing the number of lights on the street, right? It could be as simple as making our alleyways have more life in it, meaning that if you beautify the alleyways, you put some artwork in it, you inject culture into it, and then people start be trafficking that area as well, right? And you have footfall in that area, then it becomes more safe, right? Mm. By and large. And it is small little interventions like this that you can do.
Are you seeing progress? Are you seeing your suggestions, your recommendations being taken up by perhaps DBKL or other city? Oh, wonderful.
I think we have to give credit where credit is due, right? And they are open to the suggestions that we have. They have seen the proof in the demonstrative sites that we have. And I think that they have opened up to it. And they are very supportive of this. And it's not just DBKL, right? It also goes to other cities that we work in, right? And they are very supportive of this as well. I think it's not an issue of that. I think it's more of, let's look at sufficient funding that is required to make this happen, right? So okay. That it's an issue of everybody knows it's the right thing to do. So it's baby steps. It's baby steps, but it's getting there.
Okay, Ahila, I'm really heartened to hear that. In the couple of minutes that we have left, I do want to ask you if there's anything you would like our audience tonight to understand about the need for us to champion not just ESG and sustainability principles, but also the fact that we live in a city, we have to think about the way the city affects us, the way it affects other communities as well. Is there anything you'd like us to know in the last couple of minutes that we have left?
I'm going to unpack it again in two parts of it, right? One is ESG, because ESG is very focused on corporations specifically, or, you know, SMEs and industry, whereas a city is comprised of everybody who uses it, be it a business or a regular person. So when it comes to ESG, I think that a first step is to have a strategy for it. And I think that starts from the top, which is your board of directors. And educating your board of directors on what is needed is very important, and it can't be put off any longer. It's coming our way, and the signs are there. So it is important to start moving in that direction. Don't overthink stuff. Reporting is going to be difficult. There's no denying it, because if you look at the number of different reporting styles there are, reporting organizations there are, you might get intimidated, but you shouldn't. You shouldn't get intimidated by the different standards and the frameworks and the rating systems. You shouldn't get intimidated. Start. I think that's the biggest issue. Start with that first step and it will happen. So I think start with the strategy for the organization and look for the implementation of it. So that's number one. As for the city, that involves all of us, right? And I think it's important for all of us to think of the city as a place that interventions can be had in order for everybody to be have an equal space in it. Everybody can have the right to live in the city, not just the haves, but also the have-nots. Because at the end of the day, if you don't have that melting pot of different people, it doesn't give you the cultural vibrancy you need in a city. So don't. It's very important to think about the little people. Don't let anyone get left behind.
Akhila, thank you so much for speaking with me today. It's been such a pleasure. I really appreciate your time. That was my conversation with Akhila Ganesan, Senior Director of Strategy and Development for Think City. I'm Melissa Idris, and I will be back with you same time next week for another episode of The Future's Female. Thank you so much for watching, and good night.